thanks so much, everybody, for joining. I think it's probably best if we talk to Cheska first, so that you can just explain to the listener who may not be familiar with what exactly Claire's Law is and why it came about.
Okay, no problem at all. So Claire's Law is another name for the Domestic Violence Disclosure Scheme, which has been part of common law for a very long time. So in 2009, a lady called Claire Wood met a gentleman called George Appleton online. She didn't know anything about his background. He had a history of domestic abuse and domestic violence. She did have concerns. She reported them to police, but she had kind of no way of, she didn't know his history. It turned out, obviously, he did have a history of domestic abuse and domestic violence. He did end up murdering her. And it got pushed through court, and the coroner and her stepfather believed that if she had sort of prior knowledge or more understanding of his history, that she could have made more informed, perhaps, decisions. She might have made the same decisions, she may have made different decisions, but at least she would have had access to that information, so she could have made perhaps better safeguarding decisions for herself. So they're not new, it's not a new law. It's not just come into place at all. It's always been part of common law, but after the Claire Wood case, it got given a name and an associated story so that people can make associations with a particular female, a particular story, and it has more gravitas, I believe, if you can associate it with an individual who's suffered as a result of not knowing the history of someone who they were intimately involved in. It's the amount of people I speak to that have no idea it exists. It's a real shame. So I'm all about publicising, making sure people become more aware of it, making sure they have access to it. It's accessible to anyone, regardless of gender or identity. As long as there's an intimate relationship, they can apply for Claire's Law to find out if there's a history, so they can then go on and make informed safeguarding decisions.
And how would someone who finds themselves in this awful situation, how would they go about making that first step?
That's a great question. So basically, 2 years ago, they labelled an online application process. So people can go to the Met Police website and you can apply online. So it can be, you don't have to show out, you don't have to come to a police station, you don't have to talk to a police officer initially. So you can make the application online, so you can do it in the security of your home or on your phone, so that the person you're applying about is completely unaware. You can, of course, still attend a police station and make the application in person, but a lot more people prefer to do it online now. So I get a huge number of online applications.
I can imagine that lots of people are still really scared to come forward. How do you go about allaying their fears and helping them make that contact?
So basically, when they make the application, I make an initial phone call to introduce myself, to explain the Claire's Law process, to reassure them that the person they're applying about will not be told about it, explain that it's a confidential process. A lot of times when I complete kind of the initial dash questions, which are the safeguarding risk assessment questions, people are disclosing to me the abuse and the violence they've suffered for the very first time, and a lot of times they're not even aware that it counts as domestic abuse, and it's not until they say it out loud and they have a police officer kind of say it back to them or to reassure them or to empathise that they actually understand that how abusive their relationship has been. So it's a kind of formulating a relationship with that person, making sure they feel comfortable and confident having that conversation with you, and also trusting you, because I'm asking a lot of personal in-depth questions in order to safeguard the person. Lee's nodding at me. In order to sort of safeguard that person as best I can. So each case is individual. Each case is, you know, on its own merits. So each one will involve different safeguarding, different protection actions. And obviously every conversation I have with the applicants are different.
There's lots of different forms of abuse, and some people may not think they qualify. What kinds of things constitute abuse?
Domestic abuse is very difficult. Sometimes when you define domestic abuse, you obviously increase people's understanding, but then you also exclude people who don't think it applies to them. So the new DA bill has provided a statutory definition, but we like to try and explain it in simpler terms so that everybody has access to the understanding and the knowledge. And domestic abuse really is can be a single incident or a pattern of behaviour between anybody in an intimate relationship. It can be between ex-partners, which is an important one, and it can be between family members as well. And it's not just physical abuse. Many people still think of domestic abuse as domestic violence, the physical violence. That's a stereotype we're wishing to move away from. Although that's very easy to see and recognise, it is much more complex than that. Domestic abuse can encompass psychological abuse, physical, sexual, financial and emotional abuse as well. And among that, it includes the coercive and controlling behaviour, which is a pattern of behaviour which has its own specialist law that came into effect a couple of years ago. But domestic abuse can have severe mental health impacts and strong links to suicide in victims as well. So it's not just about the physical violence that people may immediately think of. So as well as being hurt physically, we like to ask people, are they abused verbally? Are they constantly put down, called names, made to feel ashamed? And we do ask clients and survivors, do you feel safe in your own home, or are they walking on eggshells? Are you allowed to be yourself? Do you do the things you want to do, see the friends and family you want to see, buy the things you both want and need? Just to kind of explain it and expand people's horizons to start thinking beyond the initial thoughts of domestic abuse, because it does affect everybody, any age, any race, gender, sexual orientation, walk or life. It is not specific to any one person or type of, you know, layer of society.
Today is White Ribbon Day, and we've had the figures that came out yesterday in time for today that say reports of domestic abuse went up over lockdown, which I guess was expected. But you mentioned there's a big emphasis on mental health, and obviously during lockdown we were shut inside, so a lot of people's mental health will have declined. Do you think that played a big part in the rise that we're seeing in reports of domestic abuse?
Possibly, yes. We kept a very, very close eye on domestic abuse during lockdown. I actually worked on the unit that kept a focus on that. And unfortunately, domestic abuse does rise year on year for the reasons that you've just explained. Naturally, during lockdown, there wasn't a huge spike, as was anticipated in some media outlets, but there was a slight rise, yes, just due to people being in close proximity to friends and family more, mental health, the reasons you've explained, and also people being at home more and being open to the idea of possibly neighbours arguing or seeing people more, and maybe being a bit more confident to report it. So one of the things we're happy about is that an increase in domestic abuse isn't always just an increase in crime, but perhaps people's confidence to come forward, report in police, call something in that they see as concerning or suspicious. So we are pleased that if it does go up, we're able to respond to it and give victims the support that we do, that they do need.
Whenever we run a story like this, violence targeting women and girls, it happens to men as well, doesn't it?
It does indeed. As explained, domestic abuse can affect anyone, and that includes any gender. When we talk about domestic abuse, we do talk about it as a gendered crime, as it does affect more women than men, but men can be victims too. There are dedicated partner charities who tackle domestic violence against men. We also have same-sex relationships, which bring with it its own complex set of dynamics. But yes, men are just as likely to suffer domestic abuse as women as well, within some sets of relationships.
Do you think there is a stigma attached to men coming forward saying they are victims?
Very good question. I think, yes, domestic abuse as a whole is a very underreported crime. I think there still is a stigma around domestic abuse in general. It's a very much a private affair. It happens behind closed doors. You don't want police or the public coming around and poking their nose into your business. But within that, yes, there are different strata. We're talking about men. We're talking about black and minority ethnic ladies. The complex sets of, you know, cultural and social dynamics mean that, yes, there are stigmas around these layers within domestic abuse that I do think makes it harder for them to reach out to police and report domestic violence and domestic abuse for the reasons you've just outlined, yes.
And the 16 days of action that are coming up, what exactly does that involve?
The 16 days, as you mentioned, starts today, White Ribbon Day, or International Day Against Violence Against Women, and it runs through to Human Rights Day, I think, on the 10th of December. I wouldn't like to say it's business as usual. The Met are committed to tackling DA all year round, but for those 16 days, yes, it is a concerted effort and an extension of what we usually do. We've got things like increased high visibility patrols. We fully appreciate how events earlier on in the year may have heightened concerns about violence against women in public and private spaces, and we completely share that concern. We've got increased activity to arrest offenders. We've got our community safety units and our predatory offender units who go out, arrest and charge those who carry out violent offences, which has a huge crossover with domestic and sexual violences. We go out, we take a zero tolerance approach anyway, but during the 16 days we're going to target some of our high risk nominals. We've got a huge variety of events, internal training initiatives for police officers with expert speakers from partner charities, local authorities, academic bodies to upskill our knowledge with the latest training to make sure we're offering, you know, cutting-edge support and advice to our victims. And there's many public events as well, external events involving police, partners again, one-stop shops and focus groups to highlight things like Claire's Law, how to recognise domestic abuse, how to safeguard if you're a parent or professional. And these are both in person and online, just to upskill everybody's confidence and knowledge around domestic abuse and build a bit of trust in the police that we can do our job. But being a White Ribbon Champion, I'm one myself, is all about just taking a stand against domestic abuse. And especially as a male representative, I'm very proud to say, as a man, I am standing up and tackling domestic abuse, particularly in the workplace.
Building on from what Dan was saying just then about obviously the domestic abuse kind of being more apparent or being more discussed, I think, during lockdown, the Claire's Law applications quadrupled literally overnight as soon as we went into lockdown. And I think, yeah, I used to get sort of 12 a month and it went up to nearly 50. I think part of that was due to a popular ITV programme having it as a storyline. So I did have a lot of people applying due to that. But obviously, the more publicity, the better. But I think it was, you know, the condensed, you know, what you might not recognise or might be able to kind of dismiss as abuse on a day-to-day basis when you're trapped inside, you know, a building or in a home environment with someone, it becomes condensed and obviously heightened. So there is a lot more discussion, and I think it is kind of more openly discussed and more honestly discussed. So I think obviously the partner agencies and the support agencies were incredibly overwhelmed, but I think we're all in a position now where we're sort of going forward, discussing it openly. People do find it a bit more comfortable perhaps discussing it in an open forum with police and support agencies.